Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Thank you, Nathan Lane Anderson. A tadpole develops legs and begins a new life between its two known worlds, water and land, becoming a frog. A caterpillar weaves a cocoon and is reborn as a butterfly. The leaves of a tree, green, and then in autumn change color. They fall to the ground, feeding the soil. They allow miracles to occur. New life springs up from death, and old life is sustained. Tonight on Main Street Universe, Spiritual Insight with Darren Bouquer. Darren will be discussing with his guest, death.
Archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Main Street Universe. The network reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And I would like to say straight away that Main Street Universe is now, as of now, a network of not five, but seven shows. And we will start this brief but complex thing right now. Monday evenings, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Kevin Baird with Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle's Journey. And then after Kevin will be Sean Pilgrim doing his thing, doing his show. So be sure to tune in for that. Our new host, Mr. Sean Pilgrim. Tuesdays in the day, 10:30 a.m. Eastern, Mary Phelan is still with us. Mary is a 14-year veteran of TV with her show, Telepathic Television. Her co-host there, or host, is Mr. Neville Johnston. Wednesday evenings, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the show that started it all, the flagship show that I started with Mr. Kevin Baird, Main Street Universe, keeping its name, the original show. This Wednesday, our guest will be the very person who will be our other new host starting the following this Thursday. So it'll be Queen Mother Imaku. Queen Mother Imaku Muneferti is a Kemetic high priestess, and she brings a very unique angle to the network as she's into a side of spirituality that a lot of people might not be familiar with, the origins of Africans in Egypt and the symbolism, and I'll let it speak for itself. She'll be our guest tomorrow She's the expert and been doing it a pretty good while. And then, of course, Thursday at 1 p.m., not a name for the show yet, but the hostess will be Queen Mother Imaku Munefertiti. So be sure to tune in and check her out. Again, very interesting lady who's done a lot and had an interesting spiritual path that even experienced occultists might not know too much about. Now we go to Friday evenings, and that's Jesse Ann Nicholas George with Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. And Jesse is the author of what is now 4 books. The two she's most known for is Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion, the Companion Workbook. And she has 2 more coming. That's Friday evenings at midnight. And Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, you're listening to it now, Spiritual Insight with your host, Mr. Darren Bouquer. And Darren is a reader at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans. Now I'm going to go ahead here and bring on our host to discuss death this evening, Mr. Darren Bouquer. Your microphone is...
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sunday night, Spiritual Insight, discussing the transition between life and the afterlife and its intricacies this evening. So, Daniel Michael, how are you this evening?
I'm well. And I mentioned in the intro a few ways that nature looks at life and death. I thought that would be a nice way to start the conversation off.
What did you say, I'm sorry?
Do you have your guest with you?
She will be calling in momentarily. So I thought we'd kind of get the ball rolling.
Sure, absolutely. And
it's about 6:15 or so. So thought we'd just kind of get the discussion open as far as, when we look at the death card in tarot and how the tunnel, I always describe it as a dark tunnel of change, it can be frightening. Can be quite frightening for people. We find that the situation itself, the fear of mortality, can be something that is quite disheartening, confusing, and can lead us to do all sorts of really ridiculous things. Anything from cryogenic freezing to frightening fallout shelters. Spending all of our money in fear of our own mortality. Now, that fear is the same thing that also keeps us alive. So there's the dichotomy is how to balance the two and what's too much. And then not just fear of death, but also the transition itself. When we see the energy transform from a simple, life presence and then we're moving into the fact that now simply this person is just a body and there isn't anything igniting, animating, or sparking that person into movement, conversation, or into, actually interacting with other souls. There's a fear of that as well. That can be a very dramatic, upsetting, and you'll never be able to come back from a situation like that. And some people have very difficult time releasing a death experience. The actual experience of letting go of a loved one between point A and point B can be something that is both clumsy, difficult, and almost impossible to maintain or accomplish. So some individuals actually have this as their given profession. It's actually their path to help ferry these people on to the next stage of their existence. And in doing so, this helps them transition and helps that transition. So I happen to have a guest this evening that's going to detail or just, share a little bit about, what her what her job's like and some of the difficulties and intricacies of it. I hear a lot about it, so I find it very fascinating. And having a job myself where I have to deal a lot with the other side, I find that the situation is something where it can be difficult, but it can also be very rewarding, and it's something that being someone who is taking the time to go through the training and rigorous education that you need to be someone in this position, it's not easy, but you're helping people through what could be one of the most trying times in their life. So that's why I find it to be like just a fascinating subject.
Yes, and many people are fascinated with the idea of death. Some people almost in a fashionable way are, you know, that you get the gothic sort of thing, the goth kids that, you know, I've had people say, you know, like, oh, I wear only black because it's the absence of light. And, you know, they have the black eyeliner. And I'm not being judgmental, folks. Do what you want. I just think it's funny. You know what the funny thing about that is, wearing the color black is actually, black is every color in the rainbow. But if you said it like that, it might not sound as dark and mysterious.
Yeah, right. It's chromatic. It's like it's all the colors scintillating together. So yeah. When you look at that, you could say it's the absence of light, but it's a part. Both there's always a white pillar and a dark pillar. So when you have darkness, when you have that darkness and the absence of light, that means there is light somewhere, and you're actually promoting that.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's one thing to talk about death or even to think about it or to feel good about what your belief is of it. But when you truly have one of those nights, and I guess we've all had one of these, is when you really start to contemplate your existence as a conscious being and go, what if it just, the mm-hmm. lights are out and you're done? And you start thinking mm-hmm. about it. You know, and it can be, well, both scary, but of course, if that was the case, you wouldn't be scared of it if it happened. But
no,
it would be, me personally, I do believe in the reincarnation or the transmigration model, specifically as Pythagoras did, and the idea that we're part of nature and we're connected to everything, so we transmigrate into something else when we pass on.
Mm-hmm. And, well, that's honestly what I'm looking at too. Is I always talk about soul paths and how many soul paths that you've really expanded on. So, have a caller, and I believe that is our guest.
Yeah, I was going to say there's an 805 number here, so let me go ahead.
805 number.
And that's as far as I'll say about the number. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
You are on the air. Welcome to Main Street Universe and Spiritual Insight with Darren Bouquet.
Hello.
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 Hi.
Can you hear me?
Welcome to Spiritual Insight. And I understand you're in a mortician in the New Orleans area.
I am. I'm an intern training to practice in both funeral directing and embalming.
Okay, marvelous, marvelous. This is Daniel Michael. He's my co-host. And can you tell us a little bit about your job or what the intricacies of what inspired you to even get involved in this sort of profession?
I would think everyone that I've talked to as well as myself, we get involved in the profession because there's a weird calling for it. There's a need for it. It's a way of helping people cope with death in a way that nobody else wants to. You had mentioned earlier that people don't like to think about their own mortality or much less deal with their own mortality, but it happens. So when that happens and everyone's emotionally falling apart, we put the small parts back together. We help these people go through this transition through life and death because they are dealing with death, and we make the transition easier for the living. The art of embalming is not for the living. I mean, not for the dead. It's for the living. It's for the living have what's called a memory picture. It's the last time they're going to see their loved one. It's the very last time they're going to touch their loved one. So you want to make that a good memory, so they have something good to carry with them.
Well, I think that's incredibly rewarding. Daniel, Michael, what do you think?
Absolutely. And I do agree with her that it's more for the living. Even if you believe in any sort of spiritual moving on to the next plane model, whether it be Christianity or another religion, it is still for the living because that is just the physical stuff left behind. And it was funny that you're in that business. Someone in my family died recently, and one of the things my parents said was, and they didn't even have a plot of land after they died. They didn't have a funeral. They didn't have a, you know, burial site. And I remember thinking, they're dead. Do they have to get a plot of land? We've been working for one our whole lives. We still got to work. Anyway, that's a different conversation. But you see how these things are for the living, though, you know, and how much of it is for the living, whether they got a nice spot, how the body looks, all of those things.
I mean, are we bringing this like keeping up with the Joneses into the afterlife? That seems a little.
You are. It is. It is. It is being carried on to the afterlife, and it is a business. At the same time, you want to have. I mean, it's not a business. A lot of people think that we're in it for the money. That's not the reason. That's not the reasons why we do this. And yes, it is keeping up with the Joneses to some people, but. It's keeping the family. This is a shrine. If you purchase whatever type of property you're purchasing, it's a tomb or a piece of land. It's someplace that you have to go. It's someplace that you have to connect with your ones that have passed on. And the size of it, the grandeur of it, yeah, I'm sure there are some people who want it bigger and grander than everybody else, and they have every right to do that because that's what makes them feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there's nothing, when you say it like that, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just, you know, yeah, looking at it as this is the transformation of your soul onto a better place. And no matter what, if you have a standard Christian outlook or even a Judeo-Christian outlook, you're looking at moving on to a higher plane of existence. So I don't think St. Peter or Yahweh or Moses really care if you got the biggest plot of land in New Orleans or above ground in New Orleans or wherever you live, you know, so that's, I mean, they got to realize that, right?
And I would say, yeah, just okay. As she said, it's for the people while they're alive buying their funeral plot, buying their plot of land or you know, those building structures that they'll get. And our family has one, actually, they have a very small one. I had a mayor as one of my distant relatives, and he had this little mausoleum set up and has like 5 or 6 people in it. So it's for the people while they're alive and the ones that are remaining that are alive. So I understand her point. For you personally, it's about something else when you're gone, but yeah. But it's for those living and those buying it while they're alive.
Well, I think it has to do with culture, too. Here in Western culture, we like to keep control of everything. So we create and we buy these places and we make these places for us to be together. A lot of them, they like their family tombs because they want to keep their family together in one place. Whereas if you get more out, you think when you get into other cultures, they think of it more as a place of release. They want to release the body. They don't want to keep it trapped up in a little box. They want to release it. And that's why you have, which we can't do here, which is, you know, the burning of the body and different types of beliefs, including eating the deceased. There's all types of different practices, but here in
really?
The culture, yes, we really
do. You get requests
really,
for that in the city?
No, I'm saying here in Western culture, I think that's what it's that seems to be the predominant mind frame is let's keep the family together. It's a way of still keeping everybody together. Here they still have the idea they want to keep everybody together. When you get into other cultures, they want to release the spirit. They want to release this body. They don't want to keep this body perfectly preserved. They want to release it, or some want to preserve because they believe in the resurrection and that this actual physical body will be resurrected.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've had some discussions about, like, I wanting to have a viewing and wanting to be seen as a, you know, in my corporal presence and not wanting to be cremated. And I can understand that, definitely. And that's the whole thing with people being weird about donating their organs as well. you know, who's going to get them. I mean, does that sound, it's always a personal decision, but it's, people can get very iffy about the dynamic behind that. Like, who are they going to? What's going on?
And again, I think that goes back to her point about the control thing. We always want to say, just as you said, even though you know you're going to be gone, you're still trying to control the situation. Where are my organs going? What's
yeah,
going on with your
organs? What did you say? I'm sorry.
No, I was just laughing because he's right. You want to keep them right here. You want to keep them right here in this little box so they can't go nowhere.
Yeah, I'm giving. Yeah, like, and that's my own, I guess, idiosyncrasy. Here I am saying, oh, the spirit's going. So, but oh, don't disturb my organs. Like, what's the big deal? Like, I don't, yeah, it's funny. I guess we all have our own difficulties with it. We do have a caller, Daniel.
Yes, and I saw that in the queue, and I was just knew this was interview format. So, if you want us to go ahead and take the caller, we will. And let me go ahead and 928. You are now
as long
on
as they
air.
Stay in format with the you know, let's see what they have.
Hello?
To say.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello, welcome to Spiritual
Hi.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, hi. You're on the air. Spiritual Insight with Darren Bucare.
Do I ask a question or
Yeah, you can. Well, we have a topic today about letting go of loved ones. And, you know, the difficulties behind it. I have a special guest who is interned for one of the more renowned funeral homes in the world. So if you had a question for her or I or a psychic question, go ahead and let us know.
I have a psychic question. I haven't lost anybody close to me yet, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what would that question be? What's your name?
Alfina.
Alfina?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like
all right. And what's your question?
I broke up with someone, and I'm
mm-hmm.
wondering if it's over for good or if he's.
Okay.
Like,
and
what's
his name? What's his name?
Del.
Del. Okay. All right. So we want to ask if. The situation has moved forward into a place where it's not going to continue, okay? So just one moment, please. All right. I think that Del goes in circles. He has, like, really great ideas. He's verbose. He's articulate. He's going to hit a point where he's going to want to share his space and his financial security with somebody else, and that could very possibly be you at that point. I'm getting the Page of Swords, so that's his verbose quality. He's going to have a lot of great new ideas coming up, and then the Ace of Pentacles means that he's going to get more money in, he's going to get more financial security, he's going to get more that he wants to share with someone else. However, the third card I got, and this is the final outcome, is he's going to feel trapped. And he's going to feel trapped by fears, by phobias. I think that he has some sort of odd, like, social anxiety of some sort that keeps reoccurring. I'm hoping that he doesn't have trust issues with you. I think that maybe it's just a situation where he has general trust issues about maybe letting people in. And maybe that's something you can work with him, because there's a good undercurrent. There's an undercurrent of somebody that wants to share their life. It's just keeps, I think there's a fear of being hurt, or there's fears and phobias. That's what the Eight of Swords is about. It's about being tied up and trapped by your own mind. So that's something that's either counseling or a certain type of, I don't want to say medication, but I mean, it can certainly help and kind of grease the wheels so that way you can move forward. Because there probably is a good spirit or soul connection there.
So what's the answer to my question? Like, is it over for good? Or, like, is it going to continue?
I don't know. It's not over for good. The problem is, do you want to keep running in circles with somebody that's going to backpedal away every time he gets a weird, like, fear?
Are you reading him or are you reading somebody else? Because
he and I weren't in a relationship for a long. We weren't in a relationship for a long time.
This is. You asked if it's over for good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. I got that he wants to share his life with somebody, and that it could possibly be you, if you tie into his energy again. But he has a problem with fear of being hurt, commitment, vulnerability, and he has psychological issues.
Like psychological issues meaning?
I just kind of went into a big long discussion about what psychological issues he has. He is afraid to commit to somebody.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Because he feeds a fear of being hurt.
Okay, so, like, is he going to contact me then? Or, like, what's going to go on?
I think you would have to contact him.
Why me?
I'm sorry? Why
like,
you?
Why do I have to be the one to contact him?
I know. Okay. Why do you have to contact him? Because he is rolling ahead and moving forward with his life, and he's not waiting for you to, he's got the Ace of Pentacles. That's building on his own life. That's building his own foundation.
Why are you sticking around if it's convenient, basically. If it's very convenient.
I'm sorry?
He may circle back around if it's very convenient. Is how I'm seeing that.
Mm-hmm. It's like it was a very, very short relationship. So.
Is it over? I said he's just going to want to pull somebody back into his life. It didn't look like there was anybody in particular. It was just like he would be. Is it over? I'm going
to
say no.
No, but my question
to you
was,
okay.
We're going to get back together. Like, my question was to me and him. I didn't ask if he was going to get with anybody else.
Okay, your question is, are you going to get back together with him?
Yeah, like, in his head, is being over with me and between
okay.
me
well,
and him, or
well, this is what I want
no?
you to do first. I want you to relax a little bit. Because you're getting, your energy's really high right now. You asked if it's over between us, and I told you specifically what I saw. If you're asking if you guys are going to get back together, that's a different question. Okay, so I will answer that question. One moment. And I'm getting the Ace of Swords inverted. Okay, so I don't think between the two of you, it's a psychological thing. The way you two articulate with each other, the way you communicate is not proactive. I don't think that at the end of the day you're good for each other. I think that he will want somebody in his life. Is it over between you two? It doesn't have to be if you contact him. Do I think you should? Probably not, because the Ace of Swords is upside down. So it means I don't think you know how to handle him in his psychological idiosyncrasies. And that's not your fault.
I think we're just, it's like we don't have the same interests. Like, he's kind of different
than I am.
Well,
that's what the Ace of Swords is, intellect. It's interest. It's articulations. It's communications. Daniel Michael,
yeah.
back me up on this.
Yes, that's what it is.
It's interest. Ace of Swords is interest. It's upside down. So, but I thank you for calling in and everything. I would move forward. You have a lot of great things going on in your life, and I think I would move forward.
Yeah, I
you know?
Have other people, too, so you don't have to talk about that. Yeah. All right, well, thank you.
And I could hopefully, you know, I want to clarify that for you. I think you're probably a really amazing person, and I think so is he, but he needs somebody to really sit and baby him and hold his hand, and I don't think you're that person. So.
No, I'm nobody's mother.
No, I don't think you need it, so I'm glad we could clarify that for you.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Okay. And
okay,
we're talking to Darren Bupera.
It's funny how...
Go ahead, Darren.
Okay. Yeah, if anyone wants to contact me for a reading, it's dbucare@gmail.com. And it is dbucare@gmail.com. Yeah, I hopefully clarified that for her. So.
She was a little fired up. I think that attraction, the impression I was getting is that attraction might have been purely physical, and this guy was no good for her. Not that he's a bad person, but this was a fraud. I was getting, like, really stuff going on. And this was like, hey, it's physical. Hey, is he coming back? Yeah, but he might, but not the greatest idea, maybe. That's what I was
thinking. Yeah,
you're the reader. You know.
Do you want to click on the 805, Dan?
Yes, 805, you're here with us. We lost you for a second. You're back on the air.
Okay. So what do you think about, did you hear a lot of that call?
I heard a little bit of it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's difficult for me sometimes where, especially with the Ace of Swords, it's all about people not having the same interests and not being able to connect in an articulate way, in a way that they can really, meet up psychologically. And that's basically what she was saying. So hopefully she understood that I was communicating that to her. Do you think she should release it?
Yes. I think it was all physical, and none of the intellectual or intuitive stuff lined up from what I got on this.
What do you think?
And by any stretch, either of them. It just meant that's what I felt.
Okay. You just hit me into it. You're probably having a little bit of a technical difficulty for a second.
Okay.
As far as your profession, are there things that you find are particularly challenging?
Oh, me? Let's see. I think the hardest part so far for me has been when someone is in a relationship, say a little old lady or a little old man here, this is his spouse that he's been with for 50, 60 years, and you're having to watch this pain and this blankness that comes over their face as they're, say they do have a full funeral service. You watch this person in pain, and there's nothing that you do about it. And men tend to handle it a little different. They become very quiet, and they become very withdrawn. 2 months, 3 months later, they're dead too. So I think that's a really odd connection where how these people become so connected and so intertwined in life that they literally follow each other into the afterworld.
And so that's not unusual then. That happens a lot.
I wouldn't say it happens a lot. I'm just saying, you asked what do I find, if there's, what do I find interesting? I find that particular case interesting. I mean, we've had one, I've been aware of a case where a wife died literally hours after her husband. There was no reason why she should have died. She just died after her husband died because she lost her soulmate. She lost her spouse. There was no reason for her to be on this plane anymore, and she chose to continue life with him.
Wow, literally hours.
Yes.
That's wow. That's amazing.
That is a true connection.
Now, in your field, have you run into, I'm just curious because, obviously in the field you're in, whether it be from coworkers, whether it be from people overhearing conversations, do you often ever run into ghost stories, things like that, visitation stories, after-death visitations, and those sorts of things?
Well, it depends. That one's a good one. I want to say, I think we protect ourselves with a sense of denial. There came a moment for me when I had to just shut down to any type of spiritual energy whatsoever, because feeling an angry spirit when you're working on their body and or doing what you have to do is not a pleasant experience. One that's very disheartening depending on the situation, and it can be quite disturbing because you can't, well, for me personally, I can't comfort them. You can't There's nothing I can say or do. I can't physically look at them, and I can't see beyond those confines of physical being to say find words to comfort a person who has passed and who has been angry. And there was one situation where it happened. It was a young girl. She was 18, and all I could feel like, have you ever seen a child's art when they're just like, they just scribble everywhere, and they, it's just like a big mess of scribble, and they just scribble, scribble? Well, that's kind of how the energy felt, and I didn't know how to tell this girl, you're dead, honey. I can't fix it, because she, you know, you can't, they can't come back. You can't come back after that, and there's, it takes people like you to explain that. So after that, I just kind of shut down to it, and as far as my coworkers and what I've heard one ask directly, does it, you know, does it make you aware of your own mortality more? And the answer was no, because it's just a job. It becomes something that you just do. Now, some people, I mean, it's I'm not saying it's just a job, but it, you have to kind of look at that way, because caring for the dead is very emotional. You become, it's very taxing on the soul. It's very taxing on the body physically. But you have to remember, you're taking people in their, sometimes their worst state, and you're cleaning them up, and you're bathing, and you're washing, and you're doing everything that needs to be done. And it's very emotional, and you have to dress and do everything that's in preparation that is involved. And it can really take a toll on you. So you have to kind of, I've seen it happen to people. They kind of develop this tough outer shell. Because it's a very taxing business. Every day you're dealing with tears and sadness, and you have to have protection from it. So I think on a spiritual level, it can be very conflicting if you're not that in charge or in control of your own mental energy.
That's a good answer. It's almost like thinking of being, that one time I looked into being an EMT, like a paramedic, an emergency technician, and you know, I was talking to a lot of them, and it's a similar thing. It's like they're still affected just like any human being, but when it's your job, you just have to keep telling yourself, I'm here to help. And you know, if you see gruesome scenes and you see blood and you see death, you got to just keep telling yourself, I'm present, I'm here to help, I can't get wrapped up in how sad this is. You know, similar thing, I would think.
On a
slightly quieter way, but a very similar thing, a preparation you would have to make for yourself.
Right. I mean, would it be an extremely challenging thing if you had, like, you know, like you did a whole prayer and stuff every day before you went into work, but it would almost be like you're trying to affect the situation spiritually, where you just kind of let people do their thing and approach it the way they want to?
I don't know. For me, I've learned to believe that dead is dead. There's no coming back. The body is what it is. It's they passed. They've gone. There's no soul. It's just a shell. And that's how I get through my work every day. Now, the living, on the other hand, they're still here. They still feel pain. They're still here. And that's my job, is to make sure that they're as comfortable as possible, as well as they're departed, because the number one rule in my business is reverence for the dead. And we always have complete respect for the dead. But to say a prayer every day to be there, I don't know, it's almost an honor to be around them, because I think I mentioned this once before. My life on the outside world can be insanity. When I go to work, it's one of the most peaceful places I can be. Does that make sense?
And you mentioned, okay, it's a shell, it doesn't have a soul. Now, do you believe in a soul and just believe that it's empty when they're dead?
I do believe in a soul, but when they pass, whether they're in limbo, for the most part, I believe 89% of the population, when they're gone, they're ready to go. They're pulled, they're taken, they're where they need to be. There is a few, I think, that sometimes might still be there, you know. And if you've asked, I've seen a ghost. Yes, I've seen a ghost for the first time. I do believe they do exist. And for some reason, they're staying here. But majority of people, when their time has come, I think there's something so much better out there than what is here, that it's worth going to, and they leave.
Oh, beautiful. So what you're saying is you're dealing with the body at work, but it doesn't mean that person is there, or you have to do like a kind of brace yourself spiritually for it, because that person in most cases in 90% likelihood has moved on to better things at that point.
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah. But you have had some, you know, a couple of odd experiences at work, is what you're saying?
Once I have. Like mm-hmm. I said, once doing a preparation and once doing a visitation. But like I said, these energies are so powerful, you can't ignore it. Even if you want to, you can't get away from it. It's there. And it literally feels like someone's watching you. And, you know, maybe you might take, you know, just a little extra time. And, you know, sometimes I've caught myself, like, touching someone's shoulder and saying it's going to be okay, because you can't ignore that when you do feel it. But then you realize, oh, my gosh, wait, I'm at work. And that's what I'm saying. There has to be that line drawn. You can't be torn between two worlds. You need to do a job, and you're there to do it. So you do it.
Well, and that's, I think that's really amazing. I mean, having to research a lot of homes, I think that a lot of spirits would most likely want to return to their home and not the funeral home. You know, I see a lot of, when I'm hired to investigate a place that's haunted or spiritually active, it's usually someone's home. It's not a, you know, an in-between place or a nightclub or anything like that. So, I mean, you have haunted nightclubs, but those are extreme cases on a lot of levels. What do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I think there's so much living energy in a nightclub, it might be hard to notice the energy of those that have passed, except for those employees that stick around and might notice. We used to think that, my sister's been a bartender for a long time, and she used to bartend at a place called Coakley's in Havana Grace, and she thought that that place was definitely haunted. And even on camera one time, but the camera recycles every 24 hours, she said she saw chairs and stuff moving by themselves on the camera in the bar. And my sister is very prone to spiritual experiences, so I definitely believe her. She's always been prone to that sort of thing. So
your sister is very, yeah, I would agree with that. Your sister knows her stuff. You know, I find it so interesting, because what you do is so close to what I do, but in such a different level. I mean, it's really where you're just trying to prepare the body for the people that are living and also respect the dead's life, but not embrace their spirit, because that's what God's doing. Is that what you're saying, kind of?
I think that's a good way of putting it. What about you, Daniel? What do you think about it? How do you feel? What do you want to happen to you when you die? What do you think is going to happen to you when you die?
Me personally, as far as, you know, well, A, I can feel, and I can also be intellectual. What I think, that we do move on in some form. As I told Darren earlier, I believe in the Pythagorean transmite of the soul. I'll explain this. Think of the human. You can take an electrical tester, and the human is a battery, just like they said in The Matrix. It gives off a certain millivolt. It's usually around 12, 30, 50 to 100, depending on the person. You can take an average I'm an electrician, too. So you can take an electrical tester, and I have one, and you can do that. We are a battery, and I think that this human battery form is the one that our soul's energy, forgive the long explanation, by the way, to your question, is the one that our soul's energy is used to. So I personally think that we come back as other humans, and maybe we've been animals and other things and flowers or whatever before, but I do believe in a reincarnation model and that we're working on things and we're slowly progressing and learning and hopefully slowly ascending. And as far as when I die, to answer the first part of your question, I would probably prefer one of two things, which might not be good for your business, by the way, so I apologize. One would be cremation and to be thrown sort of to the wind, the element of air, which is my birth sign. And the other would be maybe a natural burial, like under a favorite tree or something of that nature, to biodegrade under the tree. So.
Actually, cremation is on the rise. It is the fast-growing form of disposition in the funeral business. Long days of the funeral procession and the funeral services is actually out the door.
Hmm.
Well, that's surprising, because New Orleans is famous for their, you know, the second line and
the band sending you off on a funeral procession, and it's really, you know, it's a great tradition here. You're saying it's not as popular in the city lately, or just in general?
Just in general, it's losing its popularity.
Wow.
I think that's a shame. Because I think the idea of celebration after someone dies is a great idea, to remember the happy times and dance in the streets and party and all that. So I hope that makes a return and keeps staying strong. Even if it's a cremation at the end of it, right? You can still prepare the body, and you can still do your profession and prepare it for that. You know.
I didn't even think of that. I guess you could do that. I mean, when you have a local luminary, like when Coco Robichaux passed, half the city was walking, and this is a guy that was like one of the biggest Zydeco artists, like in the, you know, easily in the genre at all. You know, local luminary, made great barbecue, you know, he did everything around here. So me, along with a good fourth of the city, certainly walked from like one end of the French Quarter to the other and back, and it was beautiful. So I don't think we're going to lose that. So that's good.
Well, even with cremation, they do, or even without cremation, the body doesn't have to be present. There's plenty of celebration of life going on even after, with the, you know, the remains present or not. Well, they can put them in a room and with the urn, and they have a huge celebration, and it's food and it's drinking and it's conversation, because just like an airport, the funeral home can be one of the happiest or it can be one of the saddest places in the world.
That's a very good point. And I remember when my grandfather recently died, I didn't know, now he was old school in this way, I didn't know that he was a Mason. He was actually a high-level Mason. I had no idea the whole time, because they were saying things like, so mote it be, and I was like, what's going on? Is my grandfather like into like pagan stuff? And I didn't know it. I'm like, oh, then he said he's Mason. I'm like, oh, that explains it, because they use that.
Isn't that wild that they use that same verbiage the whole time? I mean...
Oh, it was. I was fascinated. I was just like enthralled. I'm like, what? I didn't know that.
Have you heard any Masonic funerals or anything like that where they use verbiage like that?
Yes, I have. That's part of the job, is knowing how to dress them.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's really interesting. So on some levels, you have to learn some of the Masonic rites at that point. That's pretty cool. So when you have to do embalming as well for your job, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Do you find that there's an aspect to embalming or preparing a body that, say, like committed suicide, where that's even a little more difficult? Or is there anything more difficult about a suicide or is it just like another body?
I have not personally embalmed a suicide, but I have done what's called a layout for a suicide and participated in the service and had to deal with the family. Right now, the current part of my position is I mostly deal with the families and the services, and I work in what's called upfront atmosphere, and it's the same thing. You just, why? It's the same thing. I think it's the same question anybody would ask. It's just the why question. Young, healthy adults with seeming so much to live for kill themselves. And it doesn't matter whether you're the family or not. It's always the same question. Why?
Wow. Yeah, even if you're not the family, but why? Why would they? What was going on? That's got to be challenging. And you're saying that just like most bodies, you haven't felt like the spirit was hanging on in any of those situations?
Yeah, that one's a hard one, and I wouldn't know how to answer that. There's one situation where I did work with a gentleman who had killed himself, and it's funny, in the funeral business, it seems like everything comes in threes. So if you get one suicide, you're going to get two more. If you get one baby, you're going to get two more. It's really weird because there is a genuine pattern of threes. And, you know, one was she was a young girl with plenty to live for. The second was a young man who had plenty to live for. And you just, oh, wow, it's the same question when I think about it, is why. And when you're in the room and you're alone with them, it's that same sensation, like they're still there, but you can't, you can feel them, but you can't talk to them. You can't, and do you want to really conversate with them? What kind of chaos is going on in their mind when they did this? What kind of chaos is in their mind now that they're gone? What if they regret it and they're angry and they want to relay that to you? Do you really want to be around a spirit that's angry?
No. That's a big no. I can tell you that because the people put me in that situation all the time, and I would say the answer is no. So I think you're doing the right thing by protecting yourself or buffering that. You're saying that in those situations it can be even more, like, the energy can be even more intense than any other funeral, is what you're saying.
You know what? You never know. It could be, but you never know. And I don't think I'd ever want to go that far into it.
Wow.
Like I said,
okay.
My job, the way I see my job is to make sure that the family is also okay and the living is right there. They're talking to you. They're live. They're conversating. So a lot of your energy is focused at the living. And that's what I feel is what my calling is to help people in that way.
Well, I totally respect your profession, and I respect your reverence for the situation that you're describing, because, again, that sort of situation, I can't imagine what the family would be going through, and, you know, parents or anything in that realm. It's got to be extremely difficult. Is there anything that you would like to share about your job that you think that people have misconceptions? They walk around, they think it maybe is a little macabre. I mean, is there something you'd want to share for, like, the world at large, just like the, about somebody that works in your industry that maybe, it doesn't need to be anything huge, just.
I think the biggest thing that I want to share is that we're just like everybody else. We just have a different calling. We deal in a business most people want to turn their back about and not deal with until it's absolutely necessary. But we're just like everybody else. We have families to go home to. We have husbands. We have wives. You know, we live just like everybody else, and people tend to forget that. And even though we may have children at home waiting to be fed or husbands that are calling for us to come home, if someone is in need and they've had someone that passed, you have to remember that the whole world is revolving around them at that moment. And the fact that we will stay with them until they feel comfortable, until they feel at that moment what they're dealing with is the result. We will do that. But we are. We're just like everybody else. We're not like these weird creeps who have dark houses and are just really creepy folks that are all paced into mine quite tan. We're just normal, everyday people. You probably wouldn't be able to pick us out, even if you saw us in the grocery store.
Wow. Well, thank you for, yeah, I mean, and that's, I think, what people need to understand, you know. I get a lot of odd comments in my profession, you know. Like, so certainly, this is what I do 24/7, so, you know.
And
do you believe
guys,
in, you know, have you seen Frankenstein, you know, all kind of crazy. You know?
But I do want to take a brief break. Everybody take a breath.
We will take a break. I just wanted to thank my guest for coming on. Again, if you want to contact me for a reading, dbucare@gmail.com.
Now, is she staying on the air? Is she coming back with us when we take a little break here?
I'm not sure. Would you like to stay on and finish the show with us?
I think everything's okay. Yeah. And if you have any questions?
It sounds like we did kind of a wrap-up on sharing from her
perspective.
Okay, that's
fine.
And again,
I have one last question. Before we go, I did have one last question for her then, and then I'll let her go. I want to respect everybody's schedule here, all of our guests. And this one last question is, this is a similar question that when I was researching the paramedic and EMT thing that someone had brought up to me as a point, where they said they got used to things. And one thing that was very interesting to them, because they got used to saying things like you said, hey, I'm here to help, let's not get wrapped up in the emotion, let's not get wrapped up in the case of paramedic, like the gore and all that. And You said one time when it hit him really hard was when it was someone that he knew very closely was now under his, you know, on that hospital bed and in you know, the gruesome sight. So I'm curious if you have had that experience where someone came into your morgue and it was someone you knew very closely, and if that had an effect on you.
I have not, but a very good friend of mine had it happen to her, and yes, it affects us. It affects us very deeply, and even more so, I think, because you have that private time to pay your respects, or maybe you don't, but we're the last person who's going to touch them. We're the last person who's going to take care of them, and we know that, and we want to really extend that in any way we can. Maybe it's that little moving the hair out of the eyebrow, anything. Yes, I've seen it, and I've seen what it does, and it probably is very, very disturbing, and it hurts. It hurts just as painfully as if you were related to this person, because that is a very, very personal moment.
Yeah, and because then it's no longer just one a body that you've gotten used to and gotten used to putting up psychic shields or just your shields mentally and separating and going, this is work. And then now it's like, oh, this is someone you know. This is a friend. This is a family member. So I could imagine that could be a very, even for any,
throw it in the,
be very traumatizing.
Chaos almost. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. That was really heartfelt. Wow. That could be difficult. And thank you again for everything you shared with us tonight. Hopefully we can have you back as a guest, maybe at the end of your internship at some point. You could share a little bit more with us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you very much for joining us here on Spiritual Insight. And we're going to take a little break here, folks. It's not to be known, so I was just calling her Morticia. So thank you, Morticia, for joining us, and come back again sometime. Right now we're going to go into a brief plug and then a song, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Universe Radio Network. You're listening to Spiritual Insight with your host, Darren Bouquer, and our guest was a intern mortician dealing in the, you know, the death industry and in that world, and what it's like to be someone who works in that field. And I thought it was an interesting interview, and I'd like to have it back sometime. I'd like to remind everybody that Main Street Universe is now a network of not five, as I said before, but now seven shows. Monday evenings, 9 p.m. Eastern, Kevin Baird, the creator of the Horizon Oracle deck. He can be found at www.templeofgaia.com. And Kevin's show is called Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle's Journey. And then following his show is Sean Pilgrim, our new host. So Kevin Baird and Sean Pilgrim on Monday evenings, 9 p.m. Eastern. And then Tuesdays during the a.m. 10:30, we have Mary Thielen and her show Inner Wisdom. And then, of course, Wednesdays, 7 o'clock, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. All the shows are Eastern Time. Main Street Universe, the flagship show. Myself, Janice, Brett Tillman, and this week our guest is Queen Mother Imaku. And, of course, Thursday at 1 p.m., our new hostess, Queen Mother Imaku, after being a guest on our show. We first met Queen Mother when she bumped into Evan Pass one time while listening to his show. And I talked to her and said, hey, why don't you do a show with us? And it looks like it'll be a great relationship. She brings an interesting twist to the metaphysical world of her African-Egyptian pantheon, the Kemetic system. She's one of the few high priestesses in the world of the modern Kemetic system. So very interesting guest. I'll let her do the talking more than me. Friday evenings, midnight, Jesse Ann Nichols-George, the author of 4 books. She's the author of Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. And the other two I won't mention yet because she hasn't given me the names and the go-ahead. And then, of course, we have the one you're listening to right now, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Sundays, Darren Bouquet, who's a reader at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans. And the show is Spiritual Insight. Now I'm going to go ahead and turn Darren's microphone back on. All right, Darren.
Daniel Michael. Wow. Some amazing insights. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I think it was fascinating. In one of those jobs that people don't see all the time, and I've always been fascinated by that. I know this is going to sound strange, but I'll make a slight comparison. I was doing some electrical work at a place very few people want to go, and this was a land dump, you know, a big mass trash dump, if you know what I mean, landfill.
Yeah.
And I don't even like these places. I don't even like the idea of them, dump a bunch of trash and bury it. It's horrible.
Right.
But I have to admit, while I was there, I was fascinated by this other side of reality that most people don't see. Like, this is the result of our modern civilized life, or at least one aspect of the result of our modern civilized life. And I was fascinated. I almost couldn't just stop staring at the place. I could stop smelling it. It wasn't pleasant. And I just remember walking around this place. It just always had this awful smell.
Was it like a sense of desolation, or
it was
pointlessness, or what?
It was a sense of, here's the other side of reality that I'm witnessing, that so many people don't witness in their natural
lives. Yeah, I
guess
when you're walking through Target or Walmart, and you're seeing all this merchandise that will be either used, consumed, modified, utilized in some way, and then you're seeing the after waste or effect of it.
Yeah, and including all kinds of things, you know, dumped and... how I'm relating that to her story is she has a profession that's the other side of life that so many people just don't see. They see it a couple of times in their life. Somebody dies, they go to the place and look at the body and all of that. I'm not trivializing that, but I'm just saying, but they see it a few times, maybe some more than others. But she's with that every day. Imagine going to work every day and seeing tears and sadness and death.
I tend to think that sometimes I trivialize what I do as well, but people find it fascinating. So I think that in this respect, we're seeing that as well. Like when it's your day-to-day life, it's very easy to look back and go, oh, well, you know, whatever. But, I mean, and for me, I get that all the people are like, wow, you know, and then it's like a panorama of questions. So I think that it's good to put a spotlight on some of the, you know, the minutia that goes into what they do, especially here in this city, that is such, you know, there's so many different levels to what they do with the dead here and above ground. That's something we could have gotten into a little bit, the above ground burial and some of the nuances with that. But, you know, there's just so much that's involved with it that, you know, it's really quite interesting. And, of course, with what I do as well, I mean, it's unbelievable what a reader, the nuances or just the day-to-day life that a reader can have here. You could be treated as a vagabond or king of Mardi Gras, depending on what kind of reader you are or what situation it is. And
it's pretty interesting at the path and travels of somebody that works in the spiritual industry here.
Yeah, and because some people would say, well, you're in New Orleans, you should be able to make it as a reader. But first of all, I won't even go into those details. but you're right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, you would think that. You should be able to make it as
and
a dealer
we all
in
know
Vegas.
That
but how many dealers
more
are in Vegas? You know?
Everything is more difficult once you jump in and you're actually doing it. But you make a good point, and part of that point is people can't understand unless they go through it or at least talk to somebody that's going through it, like in your case or in the case of our guest that we had earlier this evening with the working in those environments as a mortician, embalmer, painting the bodies up, getting them ready. And even in cremations, I guess they could still do that. Mm-hmm. Anything else they could have. But the idea of seeing the other side of life or death that most people don't spend much time with. Even in my job, I see that sometimes, like as an electrician. I remember during, and I'm not trying to make a connection here, but except for one on what people think, and it makes my point in a way that we're talking about. Be careful what you expect and what you act, because after that bombing happened in Boston during the marathon, there were people putting pictures on the internet going, look, there's a guy on the roof. Well, in my job, there's a guy on the roof like every day. So it's not unusual that the guy on the roof nearby, folks.
You
kind of see my point now that I'm making? Yeah. So if somebody was trying to be serious to pursue that, they turned that into the authorities. This guy's picture is now on the paper. It's in the, and it was probably just a guy working on a train, working on, you know, something like a rooftop air conditioning unit or something. It happens every single day, you know, all the time. You don't know these people are crawling around your rooftops fixing things. But people are like, there's a guy on the roof nearby. It must be him. And they were all making, I mean, you know, blogs written about it. One dude on a roof. You know, I'm like, folks, there's guys on roofs every day.
And that's another reason why, you know, even there's always hysteria and weirdness, and there's no reason to perpetuate that. You know, like well, my guess, the reason for anonymity is, quite honestly, you know, it's an industry that's, you know, unless you're certified in it, it's pretty closed, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
And because there's legal and you know, statewide ordinances and things like that, and it's respecting the clients as well, you know, what you have to do. I also do that, you know, with a lot of my clients as well, but, you know, that's where, you know, you don't share people's personal situations, you know.
Right, share their reading.
No, you can't. It's a clinical thing. You're like a clinician on a lot of levels. I can't talk about my life and you know, what you see is like books that are written by Beyond Fortune and other people. They share cases, but they're also probably given releases on that. So while I am working on said publication, that'll be something that I'll pick certain situations and you know, get a release on that if it's okay, and then of course not use names depending on, you know, what's going on. So definitely not using any names, but
and speaking of which I can use the name of this person because it's one of my favorite people, someone I grew up with, it's me. Just kidding.
Oh well, there you go, someone you grew up with.
Someone I've known, I think I've known this person most of my life, maybe not the entire time. But I didn't mean to get too philosophical there, folks. But I posted this on Facebook during the summer solstice ritual we did. I posted that I had drawn the tower card for me, like Janice I drew a card for. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Days later,
yeah, I noticed that.
I dramatically fell down the steps during a time of, let's just say, not so much focus. And it really made me start to rethink how I'd been doing certain things. And so it is interesting how I was injured, but not bad, and not enough to stop me. But
yeah,
I had,
what
like,
exactly? You just lost your balance, or what exactly happened?
It's a slippery staircase.
Mm-hmm.
And I just the top of it, I just slipped, the rails came off, I blew right through them. I remember thinking as I was going down, oh, the rails are going to stop me. my legs just went right through them. And it was one of those things where you land on the tailbone, and you kind of get that tailbone bruise thing going on with everything a little difficult.
Were you completely sober at the time?
There's a good chance I was not.
Oh, well, then that changes the story. Okay. If you were completely sober, I would say that it might have something to do with your path and you not paying attention and had the universe trying to tell you something very particular. However,
I wasn't necessarily intoxicated, though, but I had a couple of drinks. And also, I was very unfocused in ways that I had grown past, if you know what I mean. Like, I used to have, like, because I'm naturally a little bit hyper and fidgety and all that, and I would jump into things and hurt myself. And these are things I had, like, gone past. So I'm trying to read what Kevin was writing.
What did Kevin?
I was really angry at myself for, A, not working hard enough on my side projects, B, letting it happen to myself. I was very angry at myself. My legs felt banged up, and my tailbone was hurting bad, and I just was thinking, yeah. It was all, to me, it felt like a reminder to get back to work, start living better and healthier again, and start to focus better and more productively.
I think focus better is your key. It's focus better. We're not
like
focusing. We're like stumbling around, like flailing around in obscurity, and there's no focus.
That's true.
And I just get asked stuff like this all the time, and that's what I would say is there's no focus. You know, why not? Well, you know, that's where if it's a clear message like that, like it obviously is something that you've been thinking about. That situation. So if there's a clear or a strong message, I think the message is lack of focus. I think that you're well organized at this point, but you're not well, like, primally animated, like, viscerally, like, you know.
I think what's happened is I want to do so many things also. That I'm here's where your primal argument comes into play, and here's where I agree with it.
Okay.
Is that, and no, it's right. You're right. You're 100% right. That none of that energy is going into, like, just bam, just this. It's like it's scattering around all over the place. I mean, I have 50 things I'm trying to do.
You're divesting your energy. I can sit by. I was looking at your hand. I'd be able to see it on your hand. I see it on people's hands all the time. You divest your energy all over the place, and then it leads to, you know, like what will happen for me is this is my normal day. I look at someone's hands, they got 8 different lines going all over the place, and I say, wow, you're divesting your energy. And then as they're getting ready to leave the reading, they'll go, you know what happened yesterday? I fell downstairs, and I'll go, well, that's hello. And that'll be the culmination of this whole discussion about me bringing up that they're divesting their energy.
Yeah.
So for you, it just went backwards. Backwards, you know, it's just like you told me what happened, and then what we're realizing is that you have a creative project, you have this, you have that, you have this, you have marketing you want to do, and then you have your day-to-day job, and then you have some social things you want to do with your brother and his wife.
Yep, music, voiceover work that I am doing. I'm supposed to do a Star Wars movie.
It's too much. I have too much, and I have one creative project. Well, I actually have two, but, you know, yeah. See, too much. Two is too much. I need to finish my children's book and then go from there. But that's what I need to do. And it's just been way too giant, extrapolated, like, pathway finishing this. And then, of course, it doesn't help that I'm doing it, like, hard copy on a notebook and not word processing, and then I can't find the notebook. That doesn't help. It's not an excuse, but it does not help. By the way, everyone, don't write things handwritten in a notebook and decide to keep 50 pages of stuff in a notebook. Don't do it. Granted, I didn't do 50 pages, but still. You know, word process. Even if you edit through word processing, do a rough draft in a word process. Believe me. It doesn't matter how writery chic it is to write it in a notebook. It still doesn't matter.
I got, like,
my...
Speaking of focus... I have notebooks, like, laying all over my place here.
Yeah, that's not. If one of them is something you want to get published, I would WordPress it.
I have my daily ledger and notes and things. I write everything down because I know my schedule.
That's good. That's a Julia Cameron thing. I always recommend everyone Julia Cameron, The Artist's Way or Vein of Gold. I am doing my morning pages right now. Everyone will be happy to know, which is about 3 pages of stream of consciousness writing when you wake up to kind of expel any anger, any frustration, any nuances of just confusion. Write it all down. 3 pages. Helps enormously. So I recommend that for anyone. Thank you, Julia Cameron, for bringing that nugget of wisdom to me so many years ago. Are you familiar with her books, Dion?
I'm actually not familiar with that name.
Amazing. If you have a bunch of notebooks you're all constantly obscurely writing in, please check out Julia Cameron, Vein of Gold, or The Artist's Way. They are well worth it. And they will
Kevin
help you
wrote,
organize.
Kevin wrote the HBO series 6 Feet Under. Close
to under
the truth as Undertakers go. It's as close as... in the chat room.
Oh, 6 Feet Under. Oh, okay, because of our show. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I do love that show. It's pretty awesome. And Michael C. Hall got his start on the show before he started in Dexter. So just a little nugget of wisdom for always dealing in death, apparently. The person certainly knows what they're doing. The times where I've lost people in my life, certainly I've always been dramatic. I remember, and they were spiritual for me, I had one where losing my mother's father, I remember I got a very clear message from my spirit guide that I needed to go see him. And yes, he was in the hospital, but he'd been in and out of the hospital for 3 years. But I knew that if I didn't go that week to see him, then I wouldn't get another chance.
Mm.
So I went and I saw him, and it was very sad and pitiful, and I felt bad. And it was very difficult for me to see him, but I knew that if I hadn't gone that day, I wouldn't have been able to see him. So I was so glad that I did. He ended up giving me several rings of his that he had from Sicily and something to that effect. I treasured those because they were like silver. And, you know, in the 90s, I'm not wearing any gold. So, yeah, silver. I could, like, actually work that into my wardrobe. And, of course, I had everyone over for, like, some sort of event or party or something. So I'm thinking, okay, so let me take all these rings. I had like 3 or 4 of them, and I'm going to put them somewhere really important so I don't lose them. I could never remember where I put the ring.
Speaking of scatterbrain.
I know. Isn't that terrible? Now, I'm 20 years old, so I'm not going to.
You're forgiven.
Myself. Yeah,
and,
right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Trust me. 20 years old, I didn't even know what planet I was on. But when my uncle passed away, which I think it was within this last year, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think we discussed this before, but it's relative to the show tonight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did have a dream that day that he sort of visited. It was just like his face just revealed itself in the dream and went up a flight of steps. And I remember thinking, that's kind of nice, like an ascension, you know. And
that's
he
beautiful.
Was very happy. He was happier than I've literally seen him in, you know, I'm 42 now, than I remember seeing him in 25 years. It was just like, it was almost in like an, because he did live a troubled life. Nice person, nicest person you ever want to meet. He didn't do anything wrong, but he had some mental conditions. As on the side of the family where the people were, the veil was thin to them. That was the side of the family where people, you know, see things, hear things, have visions.
So he would have been the one to hang on a little afterwards to kind of let people know things were okay.
And it was really happy. His face definitely was smiling almost in a funny way because in the dream, it was a friend of mine looking. I'll describe it briefly. It won't take long. A friend of mine, we're just told, because we're both construction workers, me and this friend that was in the dream, we're told there's a problem in the house and you guys got to fix it. I don't even remember what it was, but in the dream that we were supposed to fix it, we're looking around the house all over the place, looking and we're looking and we're looking and we can't find the problem. And then all of a sudden, I'm walking by this room, and I get this really eerie feeling by this room in the dream, and I'm like, oh, I think I know what's going on. And then I looked in there, and then my friend in the dream agreed with me. He just kind of nodded his head. Like, at first he was like, what? And he nodded his head. And I sort of opened this curtain door, and that's when his face sort of floated out of the door and floated up the steps. And it was just
his face, is what you're saying.
Mostly, yeah. It was just an image, kind of an image of his face, just sort of that I remember the most, just kind of floating by and floating up the steps and kind of looking happy and smiling and floating upwards, basically. And it felt very eerie at first. Like, I remember it looking very gray and silver. Like, it had this sort of dark look. The room, mm-hmm. I mean, when I opened that curtain.
Oh, the room itself.
Like, I knew that room was special, and we had been investigating all these rooms in the house, and that room had this powerful, special, weird feeling to it. And I just sort of gently opened the curtain. I was like, I think I know what's going on here. Rick, it was my friend Rick, and he's like, oh, okay. And then he kind of floated up. And it was that simple. It just ended that quickly and peacefully. But it did feel very eerie and a little scary, like, right before I opened that curtain. You know, it was that feeling of, like, I knew something unique was going on.
Well, I think that because it's such a benevolent spirit,
yeah.
I think that you need to get a little more in touch with your mediumistic side, because you shouldn't have been frightened of that, you know?
I don't necessarily mean afraid, but you know when something is just different, I guess, maybe.
I know, but have you seen any spirits, like, in your waking conscious mind?
Yes, but not in recent time, except for, like, maybe, like, corner of the eye kind of things. I do get
you
that.
You need to, just as a spiritualist, I would say you need to toughen your resolve a little bit to see spirits. And I'm not saying put yourself in situations where they appear or anything like that, but just toughen your resolve and maybe open yourself to that, because as a reader, you're going to ring a bell in the darkness, and you want to be able to process if you do have to see something, you know.
Right.
So just as a friend, I would say that.
No, I agree. I think I've worked through most.
You were afraid of you weren't. I'm not saying you were afraid, but to have that stomach drop feeling and that eerie feeling.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It was true. It did happen like that. I'm not lying.
And I'll be the first to tell you, I've had that stomach drop feeling, but I don't have it in my morn anymore, because that grandfather that passed away, he shows up in my dream once every month and a half, maybe.
Once every now and again.
His ex-wife, my grandmother, same thing. She shows up all the time. You know, and it's that place where you want to be able to take their visitation, and when you can handle it and process it in a way where it's, you know, poetic, and then you can ask them all kind of questions, that's what's really cool.
Right. Then you can actually engage the situation instead of just being a spectator, I guess.
And somebody at my work, and I do work at, you know, Marie Laveau's, and Reverend Zombies had given me a book on a lot of Brazilian, you know, Cubanda and stuff like that. And I was reading it, and there were power words. They're really strong power words, and I was reading them, and the whole room was changing. And I'm like, whoa, that's pretty amazing. And sure enough, my grandfather showed up that night, and he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, that's doing my reading this book. He's like, no, you're not. I'm like, okay, but it was pretty cool. Nope. Not cool. Like, okay. And that's the first thing they teach you in Afro-Caribbean mysticism, is you listen to your ancestors. Oh, hardcore.
Right.
Like, you better listen.
Like, so you're like, hey, what did I mess up?
You listen to your ancestors first, then you listen to whatever other spirits come by. Because your ancestors, they want to make sure you're okay, no matter what. You might, you know, you can believe other spirits or energies or elemental energies, but you believe your ancestors first, because they have a vested interest in your health, welfare, and prosperity.
Mm.
And that's what family, in a ascended family or departed family, they definitely do. Because they've most hopefully dealt with all their whatever BS they have to deal with, and now they're ready to see you succeed. Or they want to see you succeed, or maybe they didn't succeed.
And that could be an interesting show topic for another day, is what if people don't necessarily feel close to their immediate family? What could you call your after that.
That's,
you know, what
I mean? Yeah, I think ancestors and talking, you know, contacting ancestors in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, or what if you're adopted?
Right, exactly. Like all those things, all those factors. What if you have
mm-hmm.
abusive parents, even, for instance, right? You might feel like.
Well, I think next week, let's do a really strong show and open up for a lot of readings next week. And then we'll also talk about contacting ancestors and if and when it's appropriate or difficult to do so, what to do as an alternate. What do you think?
I think that's awesome, and we have a call, and I think I recognize the number, so I'm gonna let them on quickly. We have about 4 minutes left. No, I think it's a great idea, Darren, and keep it in your mind and remind me, please.
Okay, sure. Hello?
Hello?
On your own.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, hello, Greg. Is this Denise?
Yes, it's Denise. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. So.
Okay.
I heard the program. And,
all right. I haven't talked to you in a while. How's ISIS and it was ISIS and what was the other deity that the temple?
ISIS. Well, which temple? Because there's a couple.
Okay. Was ISIS and another major deity? ISIS Chongo or was?
Chongo.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right.
And Chongo. But I heard the program. I didn't hear all of it. I heard the last 30 minutes or so.
Beautiful.
But I did hear the mortician and her talking about her experiences. And I wanted to say, I know you're aware that my mother passed away on Memorial Day. At least I
mm-hmm.
think you're aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been definitely... playing with the electronics in the house. And when I'm talking to either like my brother or another relative, the fax machine goes on or the lights go off or the
mm-hmm.
computer
mm-hmm.
computer does different things. So she's definitely been around, even though I haven't physically seen her eye to eye, but she's been doing a lot, trust me, with the fax machine and other things. And
look who her daughter is. I mean, we're talking about.
Well, yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about,
yeah.
you know, this is your mom. I know what my mom is. And she may have been raised in a very conservative world, but she is not. She's a firecracker powerhouse lady. Like, so I can't imagine what your mom's like.
Oh, yeah, mine's like that.
It's like.
Yes. Well, Daniel was on the phone with me earlier today where a relative had called, and once again the fax machine had came on. And I was,
mm-hmm.
I was talking to Danica, and Daniel was Daniel, so it was like, okay, one, you stop, and we'll try to get the fax machine off. But Daniel ended up disconnecting, and so did Danica. But ancestors are definitely aware of the presence that they have, and they definitely keep an eye on those that they love. So there's, even though she's not here in body, she's definitely here in spirit.
Oh, yeah, well, and that's what I said. Her spirit is probably not going to follow her body around.
Yeah.
You know? It's going to come back to you and visit you. But we are kind of closing in on it a little bit. We should talk a little bit. Are we gonna wrap soon?
Yeah.
You and I? Janice?
Yes. Yeah, I guess
you
guys are. What,
we've been
minutes,
Facebook messaging. But give me a call so that way we can flesh out between, because I have a crazy schedule too. So.
Okay.
As well, you know. But just, give me a call and we'll flesh it out because... When people contact me, it's like we end up emailing or Facebooking or whatever like 15 times to figure out what time.
Yeah.
So it's just give me a call, and that's usually how we do it. But I wanted to thank everybody for listening tonight. And again, Janice, my condolences.
Thank you
for just, you know, spending some time listening as well. And we'll talk soon. Daniel, Michael, thanks again. If you want to get in contact with me for a consultation, deepwhocare@gmail.com. And we will all talk again next week.
All right. You have a good week.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Denise, for calling. Thank you for everyone that joined us. You've been listening to Spiritual Insight on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.